from New York. It's Thursday night. We're burning down the house. A continuing conversation about the culture of architecture, in which we tear down, lay forth, and build up the elements, the attitudes, opinions, obsessions, fantasies, passions, and ideas that inform and direct the creation of our built environment. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, your host here on the Heritage Radio Network. This evening's program is sponsored by TechServe on West 23rd Street in Manhattan, the number one source for everything related to the Macintosh computer, sales, service, and support. Our guest, our first guest this evening here in studio, studied the ancient and vital art and science of feng shui, Jennifer Ellen Frank. Wang Sheng Hao, Jennifer. Good evening.
Good evening.
I understand that you study feng shui in China, that you have several certificates of feng shui from the Metropolitan Institute of Interior Design, the New York School of Classical Feng Shui, that you have practiced black hat sect feng shui, but that recently, or more predominantly, you practice classical feng shui.
Right.
And before we get into our first extended conversation, I'd like you to explain simply for our listeners, what is feng shui and why here in the West, although it's a Chinese system, why should we know about it?
Well, first of all, it's a different way of looking about design and energy and flow, so somebody can feel comfortable in their environment. But I need to explain what feng shui means. It means wind and water. And wind is like the breath of life. It's how we breathe and how we get through the day. And water is like the liquid of life. You need to have liquid to be able to function in the world. And our bodies are mainly made of water. So that's really the basis of what it means.
So it's a design discipline.
It's a design discipline, but it's also a way of having your environment placed around so that everything can happen in the life the way you want it. And the first thing that I usually tell people, because people don't understand what I'm talking about, and they're like, what is that? So I always start to say, like, the first thing is when you come upon a place, you walk in the door, you look and you see all this clutter. Especially in Manhattan, because our spaces are very small.
Let's not get too detailed.
Oh, sorry.
Because we have an hour to talk about the arcana of it. But so in general terms, feng shui is a design philosophy and a system of arranging items in your space, a system of deciding which colors to use in which parts of your house, what arrangement of rooms can mean in terms of your health and your luckiness, which is very important to the Chinese, and a way of seeking a harmonious life. Is that correct?
Yeah, and it's also about wealth, too.
Yes.
Well, which is a big part.
Wealth and luckiness and health, also in China.
Right, right.
Okay, so fellas, I think we should have a brief break and we'll come back and really get into the art and science of feng shui.
A helicopter.
Welcome back to Burning Down the House, every Thursday at 8 Eastern Time on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, your host, here with Jennifer Ellen Frank, a feng shui
consultant,
master or mistress. Don't you have to be a master to be really kick-ass? Tonight's program is sponsored by TechServe, number one source for all things Macintosh computer. This break music was from the band Brian Bonds, which is counts among its members are producer E.J. Dukoski. Jack Inslee is our engineer. Now we're talking about the ancient art, science, and religious system of feng shui, which the cognoscenti know that it's feng shui, even though it's spelled feng shui. So if you're looking this up on your Google, it's F-E-N-G-S-H-U-I. But for some reason in Chinese, wind and water is feng shui. So we're talking about ways to increase your health, your wealth, your happiness, and your luck through manipulation of elements in your home, in your garden, in your workplace. Let's start with the home first, because to a certain extent, we have more control over our homes than
we do. Are you talking about homes or are you talking about apartments?
I think for most of America, home means a house, but for us here in the urban Northeast, it means an apartment. Why is it different?
Well, because in apartments in New York, there's so many people living on one floor, and then there's so many floors in a building that it's hard to just segregate out this one little space of somebody when you are doing feng shui. So it's, in a sense, almost harder and more stress on me when I have to do a place like that, because I have to encompass a whole lot of different visual things to look at, you know, as opposed to just going to house. We have the house, you know, the driveway, the landscaping, and you just figure it out.
Okay, so let's take at the minimum. Let's suppose that one of our friends has, and one of our listeners has a studio apartment.
Yeah, I knew you were gonna say that.
with two windows at the end,
and their whole life in this little
and space. All of their things. And when you open the door, you're standing in what is their living room, bedroom, and kitchen.
Right.
That would seem to me to be a very difficult space to contained this magical thing the Chinese love to speak of.
I know.
Which is qi.
Qi, and qi
the
means
life
energy,
force.
Yeah.
Yes. That which is manipulated if you're into martial arts when you do Tai Chi or
Qigong.
Although, if you're studying Qigong, you never, ever talk about qi. You just feel it.
Right, you feel it and move your energy through your body for health.
So in feng shui, we're manipulating the flow of qi, is that correct?
Yes, we are. And studios are the most difficult thing to do, and I get many clients that live in one. So the first thing you have to do is when you walk in, and people think it's really strange, but you just have to tell them not to talk to you so you can actually really assess the space, because there's so much coming at you at once.
When you're evaluating.
Yeah, when you're evaluating. And the thing that really, you know, I started to say before is you have to start to look and see if there's a lot of clutter, because you have to even see if you can get in the door. And in Manhattan, especially here, because of the way it is, you're always picking up, you know, articles and magazines and your shopping bags, and it's really hard to contain that clutter. It's like a job in itself. But without clearing that first, it's really hard for anything to flow. It's just, you know, stagnant energy.
So I would imagine that if you open the door and you stumble over the bicycle,
that is
very bad feng shui.
Right. And it's like, you know, well, where do we put this bicycle? You know, and that's where I have very extensive design background, but I can start to figure out ways. Okay, can we hang the bicycle? And you try to find a very interesting hook and a very interesting place to put the bicycle, so it becomes a form of art instead of this big thing in your hallway when you first walk in.
Of course, having a hanging bicycle, as I once had in my apartment on St. Mark's Place,
right?
When it fell on me,
you ended
that
up
was
in the
most
hospital.
Inauspicious.
Right. You know, so, you know, it's a lot of give and take, too. I mean, nothing's going to be perfect.
Well, what are big principles, aside from we've now identified clutter
right.
is very bad, big principles in feng shui to clear the space, to improve the harmonious quality of your living space?
Well, in a situation like that, you know, the next thing I sort of assess and look at is, you know, I'll see if there's a certain smell. I'll see if there's air moving. A lot of times, a studio space is so small, you feel like you can't even breathe in it, you know? And it's like, do I look and see if the window's open? Do I look and see if, you know, there's a way to move the air with, like, a fan? It's just really important, because if you can't move the air and you can't breathe, you're holding in, you're holding your energy really tight.
Well, now that just sounds like...
It sounds like a lot of woo-woo, right?
No, that sounds intuitive and common sense, not the distilled knowledge of the ancients.
Right, but see, feng shui is very common sense. I mean, when it started, they were just really figuring out where to bury their people. That's how it all started. But anyways...
In the ground, I should imagine.
Yeah, in the ground. But, you know, where to place it, you know, where to make your house, where to
put the dead stuff, put the dead folk downhill from the water source.
Exactly.
Right.
And figure out the water source to grow their rice, because that's how they made their money.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it goes back to all that. But anyways, back to the studio and things that you should look for and should do. Also, you know, a simple thing is, like, look at lighting. You know, is it really dark? Is there a lot of sunlight? You know, if not, a very simple thing to do, start to look and see, how can I make more of a light source?
Are you suggesting that extremes are a bad idea?
Yeah.
Too much light is as bad as not enough?
Yeah. But actually, more light is better than not enough light, because that's called uprising chi. You're opening up to space.
Very good.
You know.
Now we're getting some nomenclature going here. Uprising chi. I like that. That's good.
You know, so you start to breathe better. You can see better.
Now, is there oppressive chi? Is there, you know, different flavors of chi?
Yes. You know, I mean, it's like oppressive chi is when there is a lot of stuff, but also when it's just not moving. There's so much stuff, and you can't figure out what's what. Like, where the bed is. The bed turns into being the couch, and the... There's animals in it. It's just so oppressive. You can't move in the space, you know. That's why a lot of these furniture companies here in Manhattan have come up with smaller versions of things to fit into these studios, so you can, you know, function in different ways.
If we see those in model apartments all the time, they'll bring in 7-8 size furniture, which makes the apartment look bigger. And
exactly.
Then when people move in, they discover that, wow, this is really small.
You know. And then, you know, another thing to look at is the elements, which is a really huge, important part of classical feng shui.
Now, which elements are these?
So there's fire, which is lighting. There's earth, which could be like ceramic tiles. There's metal, which is metal. Water is water flow, which, you know, I mean, if you can get a fountain, that's great. If you, you know, don't mind the noise of that. And then there's wood, and wood is wood. And it's very important for, especially when I go to a studio, I try to figure out how to balance those elements, because a lot of time you go in and there's just so much wood. It's just too much wood. There's the wood floor. I mean, everything's wood, you know, or somebody wants to sleep on a metal bed, which is not a good thing for anybody to sleep on, because it's a conduit for energy just running constantly. I don't know how anybody could sleep like that.
Well, in modern times, with electromotive force coming from electrical wiring, yes, I can understand that, but... Through the centuries, when we didn't have electricity, are you suggesting that there was an aspect of chi at work circulating through metal beds at Versailles, for example?
Or
in my grandparents' house in Indiana, where there were
the old metal beds,
iron beds.
Yeah. No, it's too much. No, it's too much energy.
That's bad.
It doesn't work.
So it's not restful.
No, it's not restful.
Interesting.
No.
But then, now, as I have read a little bit about feng shui, is that there are cures that can be done. So if you have a beloved metal bed, can you cure the overwhelming metal element?
Well, I mean, I always tell people, you know, the good news, the bad news, you know, plan A, plan B. And, you know, if they're really attached to it, there's not a whole lot I can do about it. If they're not really attached to it, they get rid of it. But if they say, oh, I have to have this, you know, I've done stuff like I've asked them to spray paint it with a certain color to calm down the energy. I've asked them to make sure that the plugs that are around the bed, you know, that they don't use them. You know, there's different ways I try to pull the energy away from it.
Short of building a Faraday cage around your head. To those of you who didn't take physics in college, a Faraday cage is a wire mesh enclosure, which is then grounded. And in theory, within that volume of space that has been shielded, there is no electromagnetic force.
Right.
Which is felt to be a good thing.
You know, because now we have TVs and computers and all this stuff in the bedroom, and it's like enough already, you know. And I beg people to either cover the TV or close it in an armoire or just not have one in the bedroom. But, you know, it's a huge battle.
Oh, well, but that's distracting to a restful sleep.
Right,
so that's the common sense nature of it.
A lot of people don't understand it. You know, they have to watch, you know, their late shows or whatever, you know.
So then they fall asleep watching the television, and then they don't really sleep very well because there's a voice speaking to them all night.
Exactly.
So what are a few other good things aside from shoot your TV set? I'm sorry, cover it over.
Cover it.
Come on in. Patrick. This is Patrick. This is Jennifer. She's a feng shui master.
Am I ruining the energy of the room right now?
Yeah. No,
not at all. Have a seat.
No, the other thing is...
We're about to analyze the feng shui of this studio.
Oh, thank God I'm here. I'm worried. I need to manipulate it to so it sounds super awesome.
You do.
Super awesome, super wealth. The number one thing that we've discovered so far is that clutter is very bad.
And what do you see when you walk in here?
Could you do a sound effect for wah, wah, wah?
On this show, we don't do sound effects.
Oh my God.
Sorry.
I have to do my own acapella sound effects.
Well, you can come over and hit the duck button if you want. Go ahead, Jennifer, please.
But anyways, the other thing I wanted to say, because I see this all the time, is there's mirrors across from people's beds. And in China, that's like the biggest no-no, because they believe that, you know, your bad dreams get stuck in the mirror and that image.
I didn't know.
Oh.
Dreams get stuck in your mirror.
Yeah, and
then they'll come back in the daytime to haunt you.
Yeah, but also, I don't know if you have to get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, but, you know, that jarring sort of like vision of something whizzing by, which is really just your shadow, it just freaks you out. You don't get a good sleep.
Huh. Okay. Well, since Patrick is here, let's analyze the Heritage Radio Network home base.
Okay.
Disregarding clutter as a... we understand that it is very cluttered.
It's very cluttered.
Well, let me try to describe the space for the people at home who are listening. We have two shipping containers. They're 12 feet or so wide.
Exactly.
And about 20 feet long. And they're placed together forming an L. And so you enter the studio in the left-hand side of the L, and what you first encounter is on the right hand side all of the detritus of having constructed this building, and on the left hand side is a bench with seedlings under ultraviolet light,
which is so awesome,
which seems to me to be a very good feng shui element of growth.
The propagation station,
the status. And then from that initial hall, you enter into the sound booth where the controls are.
Yeah,
the engineering is.
I would actually be interested in, after we talk about the general studio, the feng shui of the actual room for the engineers and producers, since they're the ones working.
Yeah, I'm concerned that it might not be ideal because everyone passes through, but not while they're doing their work for the shows.
And we did create the window.
There is a window so we can see. Next step is get the engineers a microphone so that they can talk to us. Mm-hmm. That would be good. And then we come into the main studio, which is entirely clad with reclaimed lumber. Mm-hmm. Has a beautiful mahogany ceiling with curved down eaves. The floor is
natural.
Is wood. There's a wooden table here between us. We're sitting opposite each other. And to our side is a glorious picture window with a view of the people having a great time at Roberta's restaurant in the wine garden.
And if they ever expand Roberta's into the rest of the yard, I was thinking, and maybe you could give advice, they would create little, what do they call those in ships?
Portholes?
Portholes, so you wouldn't see a big window, but you would see glimpses into the rest of the yard.
I think that would be architecturally very interesting.
Oh, I have a great idea. Can I answer that one?
Of course.
Okay.
It's our conversation.
Okay. This room, the first thing that I would do, obviously we all acknowledge there's clutter, but the elements aren't balanced. This is a perfect example. I was trying to tell you there is way too much wood. It's really distracting for me. to have this conversation with you because I keep wanting to look at the wood and then look right out the window. So to contain the energy in, I would suggest a whole lot more things to balance the different elements and go through the five elements and all that.
Such as?
Okay, so for fire, obviously it's lighting. And I feel there's just these two bulbs, you know. I just need more lighting. Or maybe lighting that went up, you know. Like
that could be done.
So like the tertiary lighting kind of thing. I don't know.
Sure, tertiary. Yeah. Absolutely.
And then he was suggesting like the portholes, which I think is a great idea because we don't have any water movement in here. And obviously we can't
Doesn't the picture window work
does,
as water?
But
it's too big?
It's gorgeous and it's too big. But to balance it, you know.
We have a bottle of water right there sitting.
Oh, good.
That's
that
true.
Water because I want to get some drink. But anyways, and we could have nine.
Nine is an important number in Chinese symbiology.
Number, so that'd be extremely auspicious for you.
What do you mean a nine? Like the number nine?
The number nine.
Okay. No, nine portholes.
Nine portholes, I see.
Okay, here's a water effect.
We have a sound effect machine. This is the one you wanted. Hold on.
Which one?
Patrick loves his sound effect machine. Thank you.
Sure.
The first sound effect.
It's there for a reason.
Do you have one for water?
The first sound effect on burning down the house. Thank you. Online instruction.
I'll leave now. No.
No, it's okay.
Okay.
So that would be water. What about earth? Ceramics?
Yeah, ceramics. You know, you have these gorgeous plants that they're growing. You know, maybe we could put some ceramic pots. So everybody in the window, you know what I mean?
That is a good idea.
Inside or outside?
No, right inside. Well, I won't say inside. Well, maybe in the summer you're going to go outside, but right now this is going to go on all year long. So.
Sure. It's going to go on forever.
And there's all kinds of lighting you do to make plants grow, right? I don't know what direction that is. Well, anyways.
North.
Okay.
Nice, so even light.
Yeah, that would make more even light.
Not great for the intensity of light that you want for house plants.
Right.
But if they're edible plants and they get changed from time to time.
And keep that moving.
That would be sustainable.
Yeah.
So we've got wood, metal.
Yeah, we got lots of metal.
Here's our metal. Lots of metal. We've got the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Portholes would be a water feature.
You know, in the color blue.
And so ceramics with growing plants would be earth.
Right.
The five elements of Chinese.
We just got tons of wood already, so, you know.
Cosmology. Let's take a little break and then talk about workplaces and feng shui.
Okay.
Awesome.
Oh,
Thank you. Welcome back to Burning on the House. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, your host, here with Jennifer Ellen Frank. Tonight's program is sponsored by TechServe on West 23rd Street in New York, New York, the number one source for everything related to the Macintosh computer. It's a fabulous place. I walk by there frequently. It's got a really great vibe, as does the Heritage Radio Network here in beautiful East Williamsburg Industrial Park in the garden of Roberta's Restaurant. Thank you, Patrick. At 261 Moore Street, our good friends. So we touched very lightly on the residential aspects of feng shui. Is there a compendium, a favorite book, an encyclopedia, a master source that you could recommend for the interested layperson?
Oh, there's so many books. I really usually tell people just to go on Amazon or on the web and just type in feng shui books because I've read so many, I don't know. It just depends which one they want to study, and some of the books contradict each other, so it's hard to pick just one.
How could they contradict each other? I thought that this
because
is a...
Because all kinds of people have studied different ways and have interpreted it different and said different things. And
Oh, yes, you were mentioning that there's the black hat
right.
school of... that, which sounds
which
fabulous.
Is much more about intention and...
That sounds
meditative.
Almost, that sounds very New Agey.
Yeah.
Intention and affirmations,
right.
And let's sit and visualize world peace through our studio apartment.
But then, the classical is just much more scientific with a compass.
Using a
lopan.
Lopan.
Mm-hmm.
With 64 points
yep.
of the compass.
Of the I Ching.
Each of which relates to a different. Hexagram of the I Ching.
Yep.
I did want to talk about that, having been involved myself personally with the I Ching for 40 years. Carl Jung, for those of you who have never heard of the I Ching, it's the Book of Changes. It's a Taoist text that goes back, I think, to about 2500 BC, isn't that about correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And all of human experience is divided into 64 hexagrams. They're called hexagrams because you cast either yarrow stalks or three coins six times, and you record, you write down whether the, most people do the coins, I think, these days, whether
yeah,
the
do.
Coins came up heads, tails. So if you have three coins, it could be three heads, three tails, two heads, two tails, and... doing that six times gives you a reading which explains the dynamic nature of whatever question you have posed. Now, how this relates to design, which is static, I don't really quite understand how you get from feng shui, which is a matter of pleasing juxtapositions of the five elements.
And color.
And color, which we'll get to, I hope. If not, you'll have to come back and we'll speak about this more because it's a huge subject of knowledge and experience, and people are interested in the alternative ideas to our received Western culture.
Because it even goes to acupuncture and, you know, food and just on and on and on.
So how does the I Ching work with feng shui? Through the lopan.
That's $1 million question, right? Basically, you're dividing into your different directions, north,
sure.
south, east, west, north, you know, all that.
Mm-hmm.
And each part of that is divided into so many I Ching hexagrams. And you have to sit there and take a reading on the house. It's very scientific. That's why when people say, well, you know, I don't really believe in this. And I'm like, you know, how can you argue with north and south? You ever been sailing? I mean, you know, this is the way it is. And I could figure out what goes where and what's missing and what's not working right. And
so, as I understand, a house would be divided into
eight.
Very good.
Oh,
give
okay.
him 3 minutes before Joe Torella, architect of New York, will be joining us on the phone in about 3 minutes. We just want to close out our little discussion of the 64 points of the compass, what they mean in feng shui, and then we're going to move into a discussion of real life experiences of an architect who designed a building for a Chinese client, which was totally vetted at every step by a feng shui specialist. So north is the entrance direction, is that correct?
No.
If you're using
if you're using
the Bagua instead of the compass.
Right.
These are a lot of terms that will confuse many of you who are listening, but it'll give you something to
think about.
To think about and look up. Let's move over to Joe Torella right now. Can we do that?
Hello.
Hi, Joe. It's Curtis.
Hi, Curtis. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
I have here Jennifer Ellen Frank. I'm getting a little bit of reverb. Is that good? You squelched that. Are you still there, Joe?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. You sound great.
Good.
Jennifer is a feng shui consultant in New York, and the reason that we wanted to talk to you was your, was it the China Trust building? Is that, am I correct in that?
In Flushing.
Tell me about the building generally.
It was the first bank building for a Taiwanese bank here in the U.S., and they it's one of their bigger population centers out in Flushing, and they wanted to build a symbol of who they were for both the American population and for their population.
So if any of us were interested in visiting it, where is it located?
It's right on Main Street. It's right next to the post office and just up the street from the new library, public library that was done.
Very good.
So did the feng shui person use which system? Was it the classical or the other one, or you don't know?
I'm not quite sure because it was a little bit, the process was a little contorted in that we were given the site at first and were told to design a bank, which it was a nice project in that it was a good square site and they had a corner. And we thought that we would just do what is typical, you know, as they say, for banks and bars. If you have a corner site, the entrance is usually on the corner.
Right.
And we started doing this, and then a little way through the process, we were informed that there would need to be feng shui compliance for this whole building. At that time, we were pretty unaware of exactly what that meant. But when the consultant came and looked at it, the first thing that they had a problem with was that corner entrance.
Exactly.
Slicing diagonally into the building, very bad.
Well, that explains to a certain extent why so many corner bars go out of business,
I would say.
It might even explain some of this financial crisis that's going on.
Cutting corners. Ha ha.
Ha ha ha.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe more banks than you know have bad feng shui, you know?
So you started working with a feng shui consultant in schematic design.
Yeah.
Which is the very first phase. And then you get into design development.
Yeah.
Did she...
It was he, if I recall.
Did he look at your details?
Mostly they were concerned with the planning, placement of rooms, like corner offices, another typical corporate, you know, item is really not a very feng shui happy. Things like conference rooms tend to go in corners, and offices tend to be not where they can have exposure on two sides.
That sounds very democratic. You give the prime spots for the use of all.
It was very refreshing in many ways, and the whole corner entrance thing was ultimately resolved with moving water, as which you know is also a pretty.
Now, how would that work, Jennifer? What do you think about that?
What I'm trying to figure. I haven't seen this building. Is it like right when you walk in, there's moving water?
Yes, we had to design a fountain
for
the entry
vestibule,
which was a nice thing to have to do, you know. But we got very very specific instructions on the height of the water and you know different things. It was pretty exciting.
It's interesting, I know, right?
To design a fountain. We were jokingly trying to tell our between New York City law and the homeless situation here that we were going to kind of be on the homeless map of America. We were going to have an ATM vestibule with heat, running water, lights, and money. And we said people were going to be on lines asleep
right,
in our vestibule,
asleep
you know.
In festival.
But they actually were very, very responsive, but also adamant. And they said, if need be, we'll post a guard. But we must have.
That's
must
a very
have,
friendly feng shui cure. Yeah, a guard.
I
would think that there'd be a feng shui cure to make people not want to linger too long, especially with their bedrolls.
Yeah. Well, the nice part of the end of the story is that that hasn't been turned out has not been a problem at all.
Yeah.
And everybody is happy with the results, and at least up last check, I thought that the bank was doing okay. And that
I wanted to ask you about that. Yeah. I'm sure that you follow up from time to time.
Yeah.
On your clients, I do. I know. Do you find that the people who work in the building are healthier?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure about the health. But
what kind of lighting did you use throughout the?
There was a mix of lighting. Some was overhead lighting, but there was a signature building. You got a chance to use a lot more. Accent lights and things that might not go into a standard building as easily because they cost more money.
So where'd they put the CEO?
Excuse me?
Where'd they put the head honcho, the big cheese?
He was in an office along one of the sides of the building.
Hmm.
Not all the corners of the building were occupied by either public rooms or conference spaces.
So the president of that branch was in an office much like everyone else?
Yes.
Do you remember how they made his, how they decorated and where they put him?
There was a discussion of that, I remember,
right.
and not wanting to, again, the sort of power position that would be more typical was not done. It was a more relaxed furnishing layout. Uh-huh. I remember that, and there were more comfortable chairs, and there wasn't so much of the hierarchy of I'm behind the big desk, and you sit in front of me in the small chairs type of thing.
Very like the Oval Office, except for the power desk of the president, of course.
And it was interesting, because he really, when we were speaking to the chairman, ultimately, when he came to, review the building, he was okay about feng shui, but he was adamant that many of the people who bank with them believe strongly in it, and therefore it was important for many different reasons, and whether he personally was all gung ho about it or not didn't really matter.
So long as everyone understood that it had been done properly. Did you get a plaque in English and in Chinese to place in the entrance?
Actually, there was a long discussion of the carving that went into the rim of the fountain.
I see.
And in that carving, I believe there was some statement about health and welfare and also about what this bank complied with.
I see. I, Kim Chow Chung, have personally certified that this is feng shui compliant.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Under the auspices of my understanding of the Black Hat sect or the Flying Stars.
It did get a fair amount of notoriety when it first opened, I will tell you. People, it was sort of in the news, and some of the This was a few years ago already, and it was a time when some of the fashion designers and other people were first aware of the feng shui and wanting to, set up their design offices that way or other things in the hope of, getting good chi.
Well, I suppose the most important question that we could ask is, how's China Trust doing in this global financial meltdown?
I don't think they're 100% happy, because I do know that one of their investment portfolios was heavily involved in real estate. So I that part of it I don't think can be very happy. But still, for a long, long time, I don't know if this is still true today. They are the largest Taiwanese bank in America, and
well, that's saying something, then, isn't it?
Something anyway. And they had offices in California and here and in Florida, and so I think, you know, I think that their expansion into the U.S. was working pretty well for them.
Mm-hmm. Now, visually, I understand that in feng shui, you can tell me whether this is true or not, Jennifer, the octagon is important. Isn't that so? Isn't that considered to be lucky? An octagonal space?
Yeah, well, that's... Well, yes and no, but that's the Bagua. But it's really much more what I would consider is looking where it faces and how to bring the energy in and the people in and the money in. And
the Bagua is a representation of sort of the entry level of feng
right.
shui, correct?
Right. With
an arrangement of spaces within a square. So you have...
The eight
corners, so to speak, plus the center.
Right.
Which is the ninth
position. But I have
position.
A feeling that for this bank they did the compass like the way I was trained with the Vopan, because...
With the actual orientation.
Yeah, I really do.
On the site, not the symbolic orientation.
Right.
I see.
Well, the banking hall, you know, they were very adamant about it being a centralized space with
right.
the counter that went around it, not a typical more flat square or rectangular counter.
Which is really quite unusual to have the banking space right in the center of a building.
Yes, and it's, you know, it's not it's less efficient in, you know, in that way. And
oh, right.
So they were giving up a fair amount of space for this, also for this.
But that's where your health is, and they wanted to keep it going, moving in a circle without stopping.
Yes, yep.
So in which corner did they put the vault?
Yeah.
Did they put it in the wealth corner, I hope?
It's the site, you know, the size of the site dictated a little bit because it was more of a rectangle than a square. But,
right.
But it was behind the the circle, basically.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, all protected and safe.
Yeah.
Very good. So, have you used feng shui in any of your other projects?
A little bit, but it we have found mm-hmm. at least in our world that it has. It has waned as a...
I'm shaking my finger at you because we don't have the sound effect thing.
Oh, yeah.
You should, what I think Jennifer means is you should always be considering feng shui.
Always, yeah. Always.
Well, through doing this project, I have met some really interesting people, I have to say, because people did latch on to this and reach out.
Right.
And over the years, I've met quite a few really interesting people who are really actively working in this area, but short of our connections in Taiwan, we did not find a lot of people here. And given that we weren't really experts in it,
right.
you know, it was hard to promote it too much without saying, well, you know, well, what do you really know about it? And say, well, we know some about it, but you know, we know more than the average bear. But you know, you still have to go get an expert.
You learn by doing. I would think to a certain extent that a project like that would infect your sensitivity to those principles.
Yeah. Well, you know, we discussed this a little bit, Curtis, the other day, but certain precepts are, you know, really basically good advice and
yeah, it's
you know, timeless.
Sense,
You know, don't sleep in a draft and don't build your house on a volcano and and you know all of the, you know, I mean there are a lot of good basic good advice things that
right.
feng shui
it's practical
espouses that you know that people should follow and some of this more you know not so hierarchical layout of things is also not a bad idea.
Right.
I think it's a wonderful idea, and I think it's healthy, and I think that part of the whole Economic Recovery Act should have been infused with feng shui principles to make
Yay.
Sure that that the CEOs of these companies that get TARP money give up their corner offices.
Mm.
But
there's probably a spot for you in the Obama administration.
The administrator of feng shui.
Right.
Aren't they having problems filling out the whole financial department? There's probably
hey.
A spot for you right now.
Hey,
right?
Joe, I'm busy. I got this really important radio station going here.
You know.
I mean, my program. Sorry.
This would be a day job.
No, I'll have to figure out where they put their dog.
But I could recommend a few good architects and feng shui consultants.
Right. We're sitting
right
here.
A few of them available as well right now. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I really appreciate your contribution.
Thank you. I really liked being able to, you know, drop in and say a few things.
Now, I have one last question. After that experience, did you reorganize your studio along feng shui precepts so as to optimize your wealth?
I did look a little bit. I must admit, I did look a little bit around for where mirrors were placed. And I tried not to have a corner with windows open in both directions and stuff like that. Yes, I did.
Well, good.
I don't know how it's worked out. So. It's just another rich architect story, right?
So glad you're doing so fabulously.
Yeah, right. Right.
Well, live long and prosper, and we'll speak with you again.
Great.
It's time for another little break.
Good. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Welcome back to Burning Down the House. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, your host, here with Jennifer Ellen Frank. It's a lot of words there.
Let me just tell you, because there were other people with my name in Manhattan, so I was trying to figure out a way to make it stand out.
Very good.
Marketing.
Yeah, always marketing.
Right?
Location.
Location.
Tell us about your interior design business.
Well, basically, I have sort of two separate things going, but I keep them together, like, without telling the client. But I've been trained in design and textile design and fabrics and colors, and I do feng shui naturally because either it's set up where the house flows or it doesn't flow, and it's, you know, for me, it's a lot about color and fabrics. I'm not really into beige. I find that very distracting and very... I just can't function in a place that's all white or all beige. I don't understand how people live like that.
And the name of your studio is?
Anasa Interiors.
Very good. In Manhattan?
In Manhattan.
Very good. Can we find you on LinkedIn?
Yes.
Excellent.
Social media.
We started talking about the workplace before we spoke with Joe. It sounds like China Trust is a really fabulous building.
I know. Now I want to go see it.
I have to go out and check it out.
Field trip.
When all of us who are unemployed or underemployed look for our next job, what should we be aware of in the work environment that would indicate to us that the company is healthy, that they're going
healthy,
to...
Healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
that's a good start.
No, it is a good start. But the first thing that I always look at, and I remember a long time ago, I didn't take a job just because of this, is I went up to the place. It's number one, if you could find the place. Because sometimes you're like wandering around looking, where is this building or where is the office in a big building?
Well, sure, that would be bad because it would set up a sense of anxiety in you who wants to come in all anxious.
And can't find it. And then the next thing I always look for is to make sure that there's some sort of name. Like, who is this person? You know, I've been in places where they didn't even have their name on the door. And the other thing that they teach you in feng shui is sometimes in hotels and stuff, they put the name of the hotel in the carpet, so you're stepping on it all the time.
I would think that's very bad.
It's very bad. So, you know, I look for things like that right away.
But it reminds me of a funny anecdote. A friend of mine is married to a girl who's now a woman. Her father was the famous Evelyn Waugh. Hmm. And when he was angry with someone, he would write their name on a piece of paper twice, put them on the soles of his feet, and stamp on them.
Wow.
Isn't that fabulous?
That's really, wow. That's heavy.
Stomping on you.
It's like voodoo with your
Well,
feet.
It's feng shui.
Yeah, wow.
The negative use of feng shui.
That's really, well, there is a lot of, but we're not going to go into that on radio station.
People could hire you to renovate their competitors in a way that would make them uncompetitive.
Yeah, actually you could, right? Put that corner door on.
Is that what black hat feng shui is all about?
No. It's all about intention. But then when you walk into the place where you're going to have your interview, I always look and see, you know, if there's a receptionist and if she's friendly or she's just talking to somebody about her dog walker on the phone or whatever.
Again, this all sounds like just common sense.
It is, but you have to, you know, and then I always look and see how that entrance area is. Is it cluttered? Is there a comfortable place to sit? You know, how long does it take to see me? You know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then when you finally do get called in for your interview and you sit down, you know, always sort of look and see what that room is like and where I have to sit when I'm talking to them. Am I going to be in the power position? Am I going to be in the submissive position?
You know, okay, well, let me give you an example from my own life, and I'm interested to hear your comments. A very large architectural firm, and I went to have my first serious interview, and what you've described as being good, this office had. You could easily find the address on the street. It's a very nice, airy, perfectly lit lobby. Get off the elevator. The name of the firm is on the wall. You know you're at the right place. There was a nice reception desk, although it was black. I'm not so sure that's good. Very friendly, excuse me, receptionist. And it was very warm out, and she left, came back with cold water. I said, here. And she was very,
so she
very
took care
friendly.
Of you.
However, then the initial interview happened in a space just beyond there at a round table with people passing by, people in and out and in and out all the time, very casual, hi, how are you? Now, my experience of this place, and they did hire me, was that people were in and out. In fact, I was out within a year. because they ran out of work. There was a lot of activity, but they weren't holding on
to
money.
Yeah, it wasn't contained. I'm really curious. I have a question about that. Did you get to see the space where you were going to actually sit and work and be?
Yes, I did.
And what did you think?
I thought it was oppressive. It was a bay. Yeah. It was like a super cubicle.
Oh, God.
Where six or eight people would be working with common reference surfaces and a wall that was about shoulder high all around, overlit.
Very, you just had like a drafting board and a computer and
A computer and a few surfaces for spreading out drawings, but no privacy.
Oh, God.
I was running a project, and I had no place to speak to the client without everyone hearing.
And were there fluorescent lights and all that?
Fluorescent lights. There were some areas of the studio that had had daylight. And when I was able to sit near to a window and I was able to open it and have some fresh air, I was very productive. When I wasn't, actually, I remember walking into the studio. Actually, it's an amazing space. The studio is still there. It spans from Broadway to Fifth Avenue at 19th Street. So it's a 400-foot-long studio with several hundred people. With not particularly good air conditioning. You were talking about the flow there. And you walk in from outside and it would smell like a locker room. Because the people who were in there didn't notice that.
That smell.
And you would think that architects should be aware of their working environments, but yet it's often like the shoemaker's children of...
They never
take care of ourselves last. Except for the reception area.
Right.
And perhaps some nice conference rooms. So these are things that might be tip-offs that it's not going to be a particularly sustainable business.
But
if you find yourself working in an environment like that, what can you do? Can you bringing in a living plant, I think, would be probably pretty good.
I've had people bring in living plants and those little small fountains, and I've had people put mirrors along that nasty cubicle wall fabric-y thing. I can't even figure out what it's made of. So that, because they're always with their backs to the to where the opening of the cubicle,
which is bad,
which is really bad,
because you can't see,
and people coming in. Yeah, it's horrible.
So if you have a mirror, you could a convex mirror, you could see people coming in.
Yeah, I'll take any mirror that they can do. You know,
how about crystals?
Well, see, the thing is, crystals are really great, but we can't really hang them when they're a cubicle because there's no height.
You want chi to flow around the crystal.
Right. So you can get quartz crystals or something just to put on your desk. And you have to try and keep it clutter-free, and it's really hard. So you need, like, little boxes or pretty little things. I mean, sometimes I tell people, try to really personalize it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've come to the end of this conversation.
The chi is stopping?
But, no... The chi never stops, but our time has come to an end.
Okay.
Thank you for being with us, Jennifer Ellen Frank. Well, we're going to listen to a little Keith Jarrett.
Great.
As we go on out. Thank you for joining us. This has been Burning Down the House on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, your host. This program was engineered by Jack Inslee, produced by E.J. Dukoski. We're here at www.heritageradionetwork.com every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And at any time you want to, just click on that link. You'll find our programs archived, cloud-tagged, segmented, and ready for your listening pleasure. This evening's program has been sponsored by TechServe on West 23rd Street in Manhattan, your number one source for everything related to the Macintosh computer. Join us next week for a discussion of reclaimed building materials, something that's very dear to the hearts of our friends here at Roberta's Restaurant, which is about 98% reclaimed wood. Also our studio. That should be a fabulous discussion with Michael Cockrum, professor of architecture at the University of Oregon, and some other people who helped provide the materials for Roberta's. That's it for now, and where's my cheat sheet? In Chinese, we would say, Dai Hui. See you next time. Good night.